When you hear that music, when you hear those drums, you know it's time for some fun. Browner and Lawhead, I just came up with that. I might say that now every day, as long as this show exists, on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. If you're driving in your car, if you are listening to this show, you know what we're about. If you're new to the program, I'm John Browner. I'm joined by Jason Lawhead. We have a little something called Browner and Lawhead. We're part of the Great Friends Podcast Network, and you are in for a little treat. Tonight, you're probably on your way to this. If you're on your way to this, we can't wait to see you. If you are listening and you're in your car and you're stuck in traffic, get off the freeway right now and come join us tonight at 7 p.m. to see Jason Lawhead headlining, me at some point doing something.
Browner. Tonight it's Browner then Lawhead. On the radio it's Browner and Lawhead. Tonight it's Browner then Lawhead. So, yeah, man, it's going to be fun. Just come on down. And if you say Browner and Lawhead, then you can get the first 10 to do that tonight. We're letting you know right now in the last hour. You do that, you can get comp tickets to the show. That just adds you to my guest list. First 10 that say Browner and Lawhead, or anybody that's listening. Or if you got some friends, you say, hey, man, if you say that, you guys can join us if you're already going.
If you're on the freeway right now and you're driving and you're going to be like, oh, man, I don't have a ticket. You just got one. Literally get off of the freeway. Come to Humphreys by the Bay Backstage Live and just say Browner and Lawhead. And then you'll be a part of this evening, which is going to be spectacular.
It's 420. Come on.
I might throw some joints in the crowd. Who knows?
Yeah. You have the brown man, then the sandman, and the same thing right there. Just like giving the crowd the goods.
Yeah. So we got a lot. It's gonna be a great night. It's gonna be a very fun show. It's gonna be an opportunity for you guys to just kind of relax on a Wednesday. Obviously, 420 is a great day that has been created because everything is a holiday now. No other way to celebrate that than with some laughter. So come on down when you guys get the chance. Jason, what's up, brother? How's it going?
Good, man. Good. You know, excited about tonight, obviously. And you know me, right? This is my favorite time. The NBA season just starts for me right now. This is why I still love the NBA. It sure ain't the regular season. It's this right now. So with all that being, and the spring coming and getting a little warmer, I'm feeling good, man.
We're going to get to the NBA playoffs because you guys know we're both NBA guys, but we rarely talk Padres because they're usually playing when we're on, unless something happens. So yesterday they had the Motorola patch, and then yesterday, in the first inning of the game, we had this.
Profar.
Lines this down towards the left field corner. Voit is headed for third, maybe beyond. Yep, Mike Schilt's going to wave him around. Here comes the throw. He will be out at the plate, and what a collision there. So Voit comes in hard and a collision with Tyler Stevenson, and Stevenson slow to get up, somehow held on to the baseball. But boy, you get hit full speed by Luke Voit, you're gonna feel it.
Now, a lot of people were upset with this. If you're riding in your car, obviously you could hear it. It was done by great detail by the Padres broadcast team. But there's a play at the plate, and Luke Voit basically just trucks this guy. Mm-hmm. And I got to be honest with you, man. I wrote a blog about this on Kaplan and Crew. It's called the Brown Bag Blog. You guys should check it out. Ludacris once said, the great poet of one of the greatest poets of the 21st century once said, and I quote, "Move, bitch, get out the way." That's what you, if you're the catcher, bro, you got to make a business decision. Luke Voit was in the base path of running. He wasn't out of the line. You were doing your job as a catcher. But in that situation, you got to know your personnel. You got to know the players who are on the field. This man ain't athletic. He ain't finna try to leap over you and make some spectacular play. There were two things were gonna happen on this play. Either he was gonna be out or he was gonna be safe. Because he ain't changing direction. Like, this idea that the Reds are now upset and Tommy Pham wants to fight him. Some of the players think it was dirty. The manager said he didn't think it was a dirty play.
It's a big guy that doesn't know how to slide, sliding into home plate in the baseline, right? Like, he's just a bad slider, and he's big. I mean, there's a guy that probably, you know, even when there are extended spring trainings like there were in the COVID year, let alone a short one, this is a guy that they don't work on sliding into home because, you know what, a lot of times, usually, he's the guy driving somebody in, sliding into home, and that's not really what he's going to do a multitude of times in his career, let alone a game. So it's one of these things where it's like, you can get mad about anything, and this is the Reds getting mad about anything.
The Reds should be mad that they've got 2 wins on the season. Exactly. That's what they should be fighting with.
They should be happy they got a guy thrown out at home. That's what they should be happy about. That they actually recorded an outfield and assist.
It's just this idea that, because there was also talk after last night's game about retaliation. Obviously, Luke Voit was not in the lineup today, but this idea that, you're gonna hit him for what? Like, what did he do wrong? Like, what did you expect for him to do? This isn't Pete Rose running over some guy in the All-Star game. Like, this isn't some guy getting spiked at second. Like, this is or guy getting cleated at first. Like, this isn't one of those things. I looked at the play like this. If I'm the catcher, it is my responsibility to get the out, first and foremost. Second, to protect myself.
Yeah.
It's the first inning. And you have to be of mind to either, you know, put your full body behind it and try to get the out, or extend your arms and just tap him.
Yeah, all he had to do was try to avoid him and get the glove at the corner of the plate. He had plenty of room to apply a tag lower down towards the foot before. I mean, Voit was not getting to that dish. He was not getting to it. I mean, he had a better chance of putting his foot through a car windshield. That's how he slid. He slid like he was trying to, like in an action movie where a guy likes trying to go through the windshield from the hood of the car.
Luke Voit slid like a trap door opened underneath him.
Yeah, he slid like a guy that bats cleanup slides. He slid like a guy that never gets on the bases for base running exercises slides, because that's not where they're wasting their time with Luke Voit. They got him in the cage. And they got him, you know, constantly trying to hit breaking balls and off-speed pitches. That's what this guy's doing.
Like, listen, we've seen dirty baseball. We have. This isn't it.
No.
This won't be talked about as the dirtiest play of the year. This won't be talked about at the end of the year as, oh, man, was this right, was this wrong? This isn't the Buster Posey rule revisited. This isn't that. This isn't any of that. And so I get that the Reds are upset, because if you have a teammate that needs to be helped off the field and you've got 2 wins, it's like, oh, it keeps getting worse.
Look, but if that was intentional, if that was dirty, then he stinks at that too. It was a terrible effort, really, at the end of the day, of trying to hurt the catcher. At the end, it happened to be a bang-bang play where Luke Voit was committed to that place in space. And he had to slide to even give himself a chance. And if he runs forward through it, I mean, they're going to be like, what the heck's he doing? The catcher's mitt's right there. He just ran right through the slap on the thigh. Like, he's going to be laughed at for that by like, what, he's 4 feet from home plate and he's not sliding. Like, he was in a position of, in a no win position. I mean, and so, but like that I said, you can get mad at anything. And this is just like, this is the Reds sweating the small stuff. Like you said, 2 wins, you got a lot of big stuff to sweat to get things rolling. And this is just some, like, you know, let's not face our record and let's let this be some type of big story, right? Because it's a reach.
Listen, that was the hardest hit Luke Voit has had this year. And it still resulted in an out.
He still got out.
Still an out. So I don't really know what anybody else is upset about. So we'll see how this continues, because the Padres play them later in the season when Luke, I think in another week or so, maybe next week, if I'm not mistaken. So Luke Voit will be in the he will be in the lineup then, and we'll see. I doubt they try to hit him, because cooler heads prevail. unless you're Tommy Pham, who wanted to fight him at a gym of Tommy Pham's choosing. But, you know, once Tommy Pham, always a Tommy Pham. You know, something else came up in the news yesterday and today, and it really got me to thinking, and I got to pose this question to you, Jason, because you are somewhat in this industry, so to speak.
Okay.
And I have to ask the overall question of, do you think everyone is liked? Because if everyone likes a person, I will show you a phony person.
Yeah.
It's absolutely impossible for everyone to like one person. It just doesn't work that way.
And it's true. And, you know, absolutely. And that has been, and I think that's an absolute that grows as you grow as a human being.
Right.
I think the realization of that is something learned over time and realized with experience. Now, you and I are from an age where we were younger, even before social media. You're probably what, 40? So you kind of like, whatever, social media started making its way, but now it has the traction, right? Like, so
right.
Now it is really so
it's
dominant.
Sunk in now.
Yeah, in the last, we'll say 7 or 8 years, it's become really just kind of just a dominant piece of either Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok now has had its hold for a while. So in an age of liking, you know, like me, I like you, I don't like, of that being an expectation, I think that shatters a lot of people's worlds when they do realize it. Now, I'm lucky, I'm 50. I came from way before social media. So those things I realize. And then when you go into comedy, right? I'm from kind of an area of Ohio where, you know, family, a lot of extended family, friends, people that are more grounded in life because that's what I was exposed to. So you have to sacrifice the things, especially when you go into comedy and you take those kind of lifestyle choices, and you're going to say things that may turn people off, and people that were like, wow, I didn't think that about you. I never saw it. Wow. I used to think you were a fine young man. And you lose those people in life. But at the end of the day, what you realize is deep down, I don't relate to those people. So, you know, you have to kind of make your way. And I think that's a lot of that comes back to liking yourself, man. And at the end of the day, it's like, you got to like yourself for not being liked by certain people and certain opinions. And if you can do that, I think you're going to live a much happier life, and you're going to find yet you can laugh at yourself even way more about dumb things that you do, and you could admit and look in the mirror. A lot of people are delusional. A lot of people, you know, they can't take the absolute, you know, pure, total truth responsibility about what just happened right in front of them at that time. They're just totally in denial. And it's like, you know, once you can get rid of more of those things, I think you're very likable for yourself, and you become as likable as you need to be to anybody that's going to gravitate towards you. And that's all you need are those people.
I say that, and I'm glad we started this conversation.
Because I didn't know where you were going with that, but I love when you throw something at me when we haven't prepped for it, because I didn't know what question was coming.
And so I'm glad we had that discussion, because the question has to be asked of Jerry West, who wants to get his lawyers to issue a retraction of some sort, or a cease and desist at best, for the show Winning Time, because he doesn't like the way he's being portrayed. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has complained about this show. Magic Johnson has complained about this show. And I asked that question because these guys are used to being liked. Like, Jerry West is one of the most revered players in the history of the NBA, whether it be his time on the court, whether it be his time in front office. That is being put into question, and he doesn't like it. But I go to Jerry West and I say, everybody's not supposed to like you, Jerry.
Right.
Why would you think that they're going to write a book that you didn't want to be a part of? Then they're going to do a show that you didn't want to be a part of, because Jeff Perlman, the author of the book and the showrunner, whose name escapes me at this moment in time, they went to Jerry West. They went to Magic Johnson. They went to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to try to get them to say, okay, was this true? Was this true? Was this true? Did it happen like this? Did it happen? They wanted no parts of it. They wanted no parts of Jeff Perlman's book. They wanted no parts of this show, I guess, because they weren't going to get paid for it. And now that it's out, because again, it's a television show. It's supposed to have drama. There's a level of realism that you have to, as a viewer, stretch your mind to understand that this may not be 100% factual. Like every television show asks you to stretch believability to make this interesting. Okay? Every comic asks you to allow them to take you to a place that they're going to drive you for the purpose of this joke. And if Jerry West or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who takes himself very seriously, or Magic Johnson don't get this, then to the hell with them. Winning time, move on. Write whatever you want. Because these guys, they're not going to like it anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think with like personalities like that, especially Jerry West, when he rises his way to the where he gets to in the Los Angeles organization, you know, guys like that, you know, you said the impression of everybody likes you, you know, even the people, when most people that you're around at those levels, unless they become your enemy and you have an enemy and you don't like them and you're glad they don't like you. But you think you know. Here's the funny thing about certain people, especially at a certain level. You think you know all the people that don't like you because you don't like them and you want them not to like you. Ooh. You don't. There's a lot of people at those levels of magic, wherever, all the different levels of elite type of status that have a lot of people treating them like they like them and they don't like them. And deep down, there's armies of these people in their lives, in their offices, working below them, underneath them, working at this agency, doing this job, always running into them this way. And because Jerry West thinks they're treating him like they like him, they don't necessarily like him. And so when some stories want to come out and people that were around the close circles of these things want to have a cigarette and a drink with a writer, then guess what? Those people that Jerry West thought liked him got stories of things that they didn't like about him.
I think it's so funny that you say that. And I've been aware of this for a very long time. Even as a young man, I was always told everybody that likes you doesn't like you.
Right.
And in business, you grow to understand this because people are trying to feed their families. And higher you go up in any successful level, you really realize that people you don't even know don't like you. And people will pretend in your presence to admire your work or you as a person. But they don't when you're not around. So it's so funny that you say that because I have been living by that standard for a very long time. And it has kept a lot of people away from me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not a clamor of people. I don't run to pull people in with open arms. That's not me as a person. The Chicago in me thinks everything is a setup, period. Yeah, right. I can't shake it. It has nothing to do with anybody else or your intentions or your intentions. Right. It's in me.
And that's 99.9% of all of what we're talking about. That's what I've learned through some things. It's like, it's not about me. Like, look, I've been in the same place where you sometimes you're like, wow, that I guess that person is kind of out of my life or something. But I've done that to other people where I've just kind of been like, I've probably made somebody feel like, well, I never really hear from that person anymore or that friendship or maybe whatever. And that's not even disliking someone. That's just like the natural fadeaways of how relationships just work and don't work or whatever, let alone like, you can't. The point is that liking yourself or not being liked by somebody, regardless, is the most important asset you have, you know.
You have to have had some experience in this as you made your moves in the industry in which you work as a professional comedian. Like, I would think that as a professional comedian, it's not a dog eat dog situation. But it's not that far from it, because you want other guys to succeed, because you want to see the success so you can be the success, so to speak, right? And so everybody's not really out to get each other, but they might be clapping for you outside, but inside, you know.
And there's always that, though, but there's that in every industry, I think. Yes. I think if anything that you go for, there's that, you know, there's you know, inner bonds, and then there's inner jealousies or whatever, you know, whatever the word you want to use is. So I think there's always like the rooting and the non-rooting for people and everything. So, and those are the people that sometimes you think like, hey, maybe that person, you know, I don't know why they don't like me. I don't care. But you have to like, you have to go, I don't care. And you shed that skin over time. And that's that realization we were talking about earlier. Like, I think it's so in this like me world of growing in up in social media, that I think a lot of people are kind of really shattered as time goes on when they learn like, wow, I thought everybody they don't like you. Not everybody likes you.
Yeah. We hope you like us, and we'll be back. Brown and Lawhead. And we are back for the second half of the pod on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. If you missed anything that we had to say, we actually had a very thorough and deep conversation about liking yourself. Talking about looking at you, Jerry West, looking at you. And if you missed anything, or if you just got in your car, feel free to run over to the Kaplan and Crew iTunes page or the Kaplan and Crew YouTube page when you get home. Because if you're driving, pay attention to the road. But head over to that podcast store, like, share, and subscribe to Kaplan and Crew podcast. The Brown and Lawhead podcast is in the network. We're in the Great Friends podcast network, where we're the number one show. Not because we're the only show anymore, by the way. There are two shows in there, and we're better than them. So eat that, you other two jokers. We had a very good discussion, like I said before, about what's going on with Jerry West. We also talked about the play at the plate from yesterday's Padres game. And we also talked about our show tonight. So again, if you guys are in your car, and you are driving, wherever you're driving, make a U-turn. Make a legal U-turn. But make a U-turn. Head over to Shelter Island. Come over to Humphreys by the Bay. Say Brown and Lawhead at the door. And guess what? You in. You in on us. You on the list. You ain't never been VIP. You now VIP.
Yeah, man. Come on down. Bring a crew.
Bring a crew to bring a crew.
Bring a crew to bring a crew.
Bring a crew. Oh, man. Listen. So last night and tonight, the NBA playoffs are in full swing. I got to tell you, I was super disappointed in what I saw last night from the Minnesota Timberwolves. I was shocked from what I saw from the New Orleans Pelicans. And I was just vastly disinterested in what happened with the Miami Heat and the Atlanta Hawks. I just think the Hawks just don't have enough. Tonight's games, though. Brooklyn, Celtics, Bulls, Bucks. I'll start with Bulls and Bucks, and Jason, you can come and chime in where you see fit. I'm a Chicago Bulls fan. I have been for the majority of my life, all my sports life, I've been a Chicago Bulls fan. This is probably the first time as a Bulls fan I literally think they have no chance.
Yeah.
Like none whatsoever. Like the Bucks, this was probably game one, was probably the worst the Bucks could possibly play. And the Bulls topped them by DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine, basically just shooting just to shoot because, you know, you got to shoot at some point. The Bulls don't have an answer for anything that the Bucks were doing. And it's not that I think that the Bucks coach is Mike Budenholzer. I don't think he's that much better than Billy Donovan, who I don't think very highly of, to be perfectly honest with you. I just think the Bulls don't match up well. They have no one to guard Giannis because no one really does. But they also have no – their best two players
don't guard the position. They've got a lot of problems with length in that whole series. Lopez, Portis Jr. I mean, they've got a lot of problems just across the board when it comes to that. And then if you can't guard Giannis first – and then you're having problems even with what's behind him. That's what makes the Bucks so strong. I think, you know, yeah, they don't have a chance. You look at it and you feel like, I get that. If my Cavs were in this, you know, I would feel the same way, just knowing like the Bulls and the Cavs have a lot of just kind of the same, good things going for them, but they also have the deficiencies when you stack them up against what's in the East in a 7-game series and what you got to try to play through. And DeRozan, you know, yeah, he had a great regular season. We've seen him have great regular seasons in the past, but there's been many a year in Toronto. He just, the playoff DeMar DeRozan, you know, it's not a coincidence that they were always that high 50-win team with a lot of expectations going into the Eastern playoffs. They could never get it done, and it was when they got DeRozan, rid of DeRozan, and brought in Kawhi, and you know, they obviously added a few more pieces and grew them some young talent, but they were able to not just look like a different team. They won an NBA championship. Milwaukee's fine-tuned. You know, Budenholzer, I don't think he's the greatest coach in the world, but right now, I mean, he's the guy that's been there for that team for a long time. They know each other. I mean, they're 10-point favorites tonight. That's a big line in the NBA in a playoff game.
And a playoff game.
I think, you know, right there, yeah, just the fact that they can't match up on the front court is probably where Vegas sees that line and goes, I mean, they're probably – more than 10 points better than this team, but we'll keep it at 10.
So I'm expecting a blowout of massive proportion, unless there's an injury of some sort.
Yeah.
You said something that is very, the Bulls and the Cavs are in very similar places. We are happy to have had the success we had this season. Mm-hmm. So our fan base wants us to compete. They want us to win, quote unquote. But if we don't win, we're okay. I think the problem with that attitude, though, and it's more in Cleveland's favor than it is Chicago's, because we've seen DeMar DeRozan go to the playoffs and choke, which, is, I mean, let's call it what it is. They choked. The Raptor teams led by him and Kyle Lowry.
I mean, they would literally go in a hole and disappear. Yes. They wouldn't even choke. They would get choked out. Like, they would be the first or second seed. And, you know, even when LeBron had these teams that were, like, injured or kind of, like, ragtag around him and the Cavs weren't even playing that good going into the playoffs and maybe have struggled with somebody. You know, I think there was one year they should have lost to the Pacers in the opening round.
Yeah.
And they looked tattered. They looked bad. And then they went into the next – and they swept the Raptors in the second round.
So they changed Toronto to LeBronto. Like, it was a real thing.
Yeah, and so, DeRozan was that guy playing so frantically, playing so high strung, and him and Lowry just they were like Keystone Cops. They would just run into each other in the backcourt almost. It was sad.
Now what might be sad is what Kevin Durant might be about to do, or has done, depending on what time you're listening to this, to the Boston Celtics. That series is very interesting because I picked the Nets to win in six. As I watched the series, and then I saw how the Celtics won game one, and I see the conversation between game one and game two. I love how people on television who picked the Celtics are now poking their chest out going, see, I told you. The Celtics are known for their defense. They give up 61 points at halftime in the first game. That's with Kevin Durant being a net negative. Mm-hmm. I would love to see them operate at that same tune and do that again with Kevin Durant having a positive half. So, but I think Ime Udoka had a great game plan in game one, but great players always find a way to go back, watch film, see what the defense did against them, and be able to turn it around and come back and be effective in the series. That's why in a 7-game series, the best team usually wins. Like 95% of the time, the best team wins in the 7-game series.
Yeah, and I still think Brooklyn will win this series based off of, you know, they're a 1-point win away from being 1-0 up. And like you said, they were able to prove that, you know, 114 points. Obviously, Boston played a bit of a better second half, and they were able to control the pace more. But once Kevin Durant starts kind of figuring out. But I think Steve Nash has a lot of responsibility in this series. And going back to the coaches, I think preparation-wise, Boston was much more prepared to come out and play the game one that they had to play to win. And I think that there was a lot of, I don't know, I think when you look at that Nets kind of performance and attack as a whole, they depended so much on Kyrie, and they were lucky he was hot, because if he wasn't hot, there could have been a chance that they could have got run out of that building, and then they'd be standing there going, well, what do we do in game two to resolve this? And a lot of the reason the Nets had 61 in that first half is because Kyrie was so darn hot, and he was keeping them at that offensive pace. If they can clip into that a little bit, even, yeah, Boston could be successful. But I think once Durant, but I like going back, that I think a lot has to do with this is a big moment for Steve Nash, because Steve Nash has the better team. He has the better players. He has the, and you know what? Boston is, they seem to have a good glue right now for the last two or three months. I mean, they're playing lights out basketball. So big moment for Steve Nash, I think. And if he gets any further down in this series, if it's 2-1 Boston, 3-2 Boston, I mean, he becomes under the microscope, because we're really going to see this guy might have to really, really coach in this series.
If Steve Nash doesn't win this series, the Nets should fire him.
I agree.
In my opinion, you have not, his rotations have been under question the entire year. You're now in the playoffs. You've got Blake Griffin on your bench. You've got LaMarcus Aldridge on your bench. You don't use either one of them to rebound. Like, you're getting out-rebounded by Al Horford. Blake Griffin can compete at this point in his career against Al Horford. Like, I same for LaMarcus Aldridge, who can also make mid-range jump shots far better in pick and pop than Blake Griffin can. They're different threats. But to have these guys on your roster and go with a guy like Claxton, who had a good game, but you can pair Claxton with LaMarcus Aldridge. You can put Kevin Durant on the floor with those two dudes at the same time. The idea that Steve Nash's rotations are in question, which makes then his coaching skill in question, is fair game for anyone to criticize, because a person with coaching a team with that much talent that's finally healthy, in addition to possibly getting Ben Simmons back in game three, I just don't believe that there are any excuses for him. This is the guy who they wanted. They gave him the job, even though he had never coached anywhere before. And he is paying you off by showing you, hey, I never coached before. I'm in trouble.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, look, Boston, no matter what, they're going to keep sending bodies to Durant when it comes. They're going to keep him away from the glass as much as they can on either end of the floor, because once he can either get one off the offensive glass or even off the defensive glass, you know, he can get the push started. He can get the first pass going and then fill that lane again and get to his spot. So they want to keep him away from the glass, off the glass, and the fact that, you know, hey, how LaMarcus Aldridge doesn't get any minutes to maybe pull Horford away, get him in a Horford matchup, get him away from the bucket. Maybe LaMarcus can knock down a 17, 18 footer and stretch some of that defense and expose that, you know, key in that glass to some offensive rebounds and getting Durant back into the flow of getting him with bodies off him, because Boston's going to keep sending bodies to him. They'll be good at that. Well, you know, can they hold him down? I don't know, but they won't stop sending bodies at him to keep him away from the glass. When that shot goes up, if it ain't Durant taking the shot, they're going to be finding Kevin Durant, and they're going to be keeping him away from the glass.
So far in the playoffs, obviously every team has played. I think tonight will be the first time all the teams have played two games. What have you seen so far in the playoffs that has you either questioning some moves or looking and going, yeah, I kind of expected that?
I'll tell you, I'm shocked. I'm shocked by last night's Pelicans loss, the Suns lost to the Pelicans. That
really?
One is an eye. Yes, that's not a – let me tell you something, John Browner. That Pelican team is not a playoff team. I'm sorry, but it's not. It's a 36-win play-in team with the best player hurt. And do they have some talent? Yes. I mean, but this is a Phoenix Suns team. That's a disappointing loss. Hey, you get up. That's the type of team, 36 wins. They don't even belong on the same floor as you. I don't care what the circumstances are. That's the kind of series, if you want to go back to the finals, you're up 2-0 comfortably. And if the Pelicans get one like that from you, then they get it at home in game three or four, and that's it. Now, if Phoenix comes back and wins the next three straight convincingly, maybe, you know, the way I see it. But, like, to me, when you see how Golden State goes out against a playoff team, Denver's a playoff team. They're not a 36-win play-in team. They got an MVP. They got every, you know, yeah, they got an all-star that was hurt, but I don't care. They've played without him before to success. and you see what the Warriors did, and then you go look across and see how the Heat just go out and take care of business game one and two. Yeah, Atlanta is not at that level, but that's a Atlanta to me is a playoff team. I feel like they have a playoff bench. I feel like they have a second unit that can go out, play well on the road at times, and that's what you need, and they still, you know, well coached. So I'm disappointed by that. The Suns have to really do a big overcorrection here, because if they let the New Orleans Pelicans linger in this, even if they let them linger, win another game, I mean, I just don't see – maybe they got too comfortable. Maybe they got too comfortable used to playing on that cruise control, winning games over time, and then all of a sudden a team that had to fight their way into the playoffs, it's playing that kind of hungry play. Maybe the Suns aren't used to it, but they better get used to it, because there's a lot more teams that were playing for something more than the Suns were down the stretch, i.e. the Warriors trying to hold a home court seed through the injuries. There's a lot of other teams out there. The East, they all had to play playoff style basketball for the last month to figure out where they were going to be 1 through 6. The Suns, man, that was an eye opening loss to me. Big loss.
I didn't see the loss as eyebrow raising as you did. I think mostly because once Devin Booker went out with the hamstring injury, the Suns didn't really look like they knew where to go offensively. After Chris Paul had such a large game in game one, I think they looked at him to do that again. But I think Chris Paul could only do that twice a series.
That's what I'm worried about. That Suns team, I always was very big on, like, hey, they can get 100 and some around Booker, and they've got the ability to adjust. And last night, if the Pelicans can throw them off of that because a guy main score goes down and they can't equip themselves to finish a game at home, you're an NBA. I mean, you were up 2-0 in the NBA Finals, and you can't finish a game at home against a 36-win team that is still, like, you know, guys still, some of them can't even old enough to drink on that team.
The Pelicans had 3 rookies last night make heavy contributions. Yeah. Herb Jones, who was fantastic on defense in the second half against Chris Paul. I think that's going unnoticed, obviously, because of the level of attention that this series is receiving, because it's a 1-8. But Herb Jones's defense was fantastic on Chris Paul in the second half after Devin Booker went out. And this Alvarado, this kid who hides in the corner and steals the inbound passes, he made some clutch shots. They also had another rookie come off the bench, and he made clutch shots. So I don't know if they can make those shots again, but CJ McCollum will. And Brandon Ingram will.
Yeah, you shouldn't be letting rookies like that on your home court make those shots in the first place. That shouldn't be that. That's what I'm concerned about this Suns team. And unless, you know, like I said, an overcorrection can be made, and they can just, you know, dice these guys up in the next 3. I'm not sure they're playing anywhere near the level the Warriors are playing, or, you know. I'm not concerned. Minnesota went out and did what they had to do. They went out and won game one.
Yeah.
You know, they knew Memphis was going to put out extreme effort. You look at Minnesota. Yeah, they got beat down a little bit, but when you look, you go, well, they were smart enough. They got the big guns out of the game. You know, Towns, Edwards played low minutes because they knew they were kind of getting run out and they were going to get that big effort, and they got what they wanted already. They already got that win in the suitcase, and they're going back to Minnesota. But a home loss to a 36-win play-in team, the way that went down, man, I don't like that.
Before we started talking, I didn't feel that way. I kind of – now that the way that you're describing them as a 36-win play-in team, that was the 10th seed, if I remember correctly.
The 10th seed. They beat the Clippers to get in there in L.A.
They beat San Antonio, and then they beat the Clippers. That's correct.
Yeah.
So if Brandon Ingram can play like – if Brandon Ingram can play like – and I hate to bring the Lakers up on this podcast, but if Brandon Ingram can do that again, if you're the Lakers, you're looking at how old and fragile your team is, and most of the guys who you let go, the Josh Harts, the Alex Caruso's, the Brandon Ingrams – Lonzo Ball was hurt, but he basically
Larry Nance Jr. came off the bench and had 13 for the Pelicans on 6-9 shooting. There's another Laker. I know that D'Angelo Russell ahead of the thing, but
D'Angelo Russell also.
D'Angelo Russell with the T-Wolves, right?
Playing a huge role in what happens with them. So there's so many different undertones in this playoff. It's been interesting to kind of watch. I think one of the things that really shocked me more than anything is James Harden's play. I guess people, I heard somebody say, I'm picking on James Harden. No, I'm not. I think James Harden at one point in time was the greatest scorer in the game. That's gone. Mm-hmm. And I thought that when he worked his way out of Brooklyn and quote unquote, this is the place I always wanted to be. I was expecting James Harden to come out in the playoffs and make a statement because the regular season's over. If Embiid is the MVP, Embiid's the MVP, all that's already decided. So now he should be out here giving me 30 and 10 in playoff games. And he just hasn't. The Raptors aren't really defending them to a point where I'm like, man, they locking him up. He's just missing. He can't get around guys. I don't, that's been the biggest surprise to me so far. But
yeah,
we've got plenty of playoffs to come. We'll obviously be back next week because this show is Monday through Wednesday. But again, right now, if you're in your car, we got a minute left on the show. Come over to Humphreys by the Bay backstage live. I don't even know if that's the real way to say it, but come to Humphreys. Tell them you're there to see Brown and Lawhead. Tell them you're here for the show. Jason is the headliner. I am introducing him at some point during the show. The show's going to be off the chain. You guys are all welcome. Just use the code at the door. Browner and Lawhead, and you win that bad boy. Courtesy of Jason.
Peace.
Well, we're not done yet. We got 30 seconds left.
Oh, I thought you were closing the show.
No, I was just getting that in because I wanted to make sure we got that in before we went anywhere. But yeah, I mean, I think tonight's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, You know, we'll come back next week and we'll talk about it. You'll probably come on Kaplan and Crew tomorrow and talk about it, good, bad, or ugly. But we'll all find out. Till tomorrow. See y'all. Peace.
Peace.